tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Matt Piper. The U.S. is arranging flights to get Americans out of Israel as the war there nears the one-week mark. It comes as Israel is preparing a likely ground invasion of Gaza in response to Hamas's brutal attack. CBS's Ian Lee says a top U.S. official arrived in Tel Aviv today.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken was hit with a wall of grief and gratitude, the crowd repeatedly breaking into cheers for his visit. Israelis were at this Tel Aviv donation center to collect supplies for troops on the front lines, preparing for a possible ground invasion of Gaza. Some shared harrowing stories of surviving Hamas's brutal invasion.
We were saved by miracle, but there are friends that we love that weren't, that aren't. Thank you for being here. It's really important.
This just in, breaking news on Capitol Hill. We have word that Republican Steve Scalise has just ended his bid to become House Speaker. It's after he failed to secure the enough votes to win the gavel. House Republicans have been meeting all day today to try and settle on a House Speaker candidate. Some GOPers have said that they expect to work through the weekend to try and unite behind a House Speaker candidate. But once again, Steve Scalise bowing out of that race as of right now. Jurors have convicted a Denver area police officer and acquitted another of charges in the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. McClain died after being put in a neck hold by a third officer and pinned to the ground. That officer and two paramedics are awaiting trial. The Justice Department says Democratic Senator Robert Menendez failed to declare himself an agent of a foreign government, Egypt. CBS's Nicole Killian says it comes just after last month, where he was charged with bribery.
Obviously, in terms of the bribery allegations, we know that investigators found hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash at his home, gold bars, a luxury vehicle. So this is yet another serious charge that is now heaped on top of this.
One of the founders of an R&B group that's been around for decades has died.
You know you make me wanna shout.
The biggest hit for the Isley Brothers was Shout. Released in 1959 and still a constant at weddings and sporting events, Rudolph Isley co-wrote the song. His brother Ronald confirmed his death, saying in a statement, "There are no words to express my feelings and the love I have for my brother."
Do what you wanna do.
Rudolph Isley also co-wrote It's Your Thing, which won the group a Grammy in 1970. The band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992.
This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Exergen thermometers are the smartest.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Two Eau Claire residents are facing charges of chronic neglect of a child. According to the criminal complaint, 28-year-old Shanta Hill and 33-year-old Matthew Stanton are each facing three charges of chronic neglect of a child. The complaint accuses them of leaving children aged 6, 5, and 4 years old alone several times, feeding them only Pediasure and other liquids, and not taking two of the children to a health care provider since they were born. Both were taken to the Eau Claire County Jail. Wisconsin Republicans today passed bills that would ban gender-affirming care for trans minors in the state and prohibit transgender girls from competing in high school girls' sports. The bills passed 63-35, with all Democrats voting against and all but one Republican voting in favor. Governor Tony Evers has already vowed to veto the bills, as well as any other bill that makes Wisconsin a less inclusive place. Republicans fall just a couple votes short of a supermajority to override the veto in the Assembly. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Albaugh Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Albaugh Show on your local civic media radio station and on the app. 93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wow. Oh, what a day. What a day in the nation's capital. Bob Menendez. What a dirtbag. I got to be honest, what a dirtbag. But Senator Robert Menendez, accused of acting as a foreign agent, according to a superseding indictment filed by a federal grand jury in Manhattan today. The indictment says he provided sensitive U.S. government information and took other steps that secretly aided the government of Egypt. And you go, how? Why? Bob, what are you doing? And this is a guy on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He should, as John Fetterman said, and he is spot on, time to oust him, time to get him out, time to go, Bob. You got work to do keeping yourself out of jail. Now, here's something you're not going to hear. You're not going to hear a single Democrat come to the defense of Bob Menendez. Nobody. Nobody's going to go, oh, nobody. Unlike the Republicans who have been kind of doing backflips around this this George Santos character, who, you know, I got to tell you, from the beginning, kind of a sleaze bag. Now remember, you know, with the ouster of Kevin McCarthy and now the realization that nothing is going to get done, Republicans were like, okay, now we're going to deal with Santos. The indictments came down, a whole bunch of them, because now we're finding out a whole bunch of sleazy stuff that we already knew. Understand, Republicans said that they were going to introduce a resolution to oust him, going to get rid of him. Only they didn't. And then Santos went on the attack. Like Republicans do masterfully. You got to give him credit. He then turned and threatened all of the Republicans by saying, I do want to remind my dear colleagues who all but one have deep, long, troubling careers in politics that I will have a lot of time on my hands to
return the favor in the most expedient fashion mankind has ever seen. Okay, George. Or whatever your name is. Honestly, I don't even know. I don't even know. But here's the thing. You had Republicans at his defense. Not going to hear any Democrats defending Bob Menendez. He should go. And today. Now. That simple. Now, hey, not going to have Steve Scalise to kick around. The David Duke with baggage has dropped out of the House Speaker race. Turns out he started off with a little bit more support, and then the more he opened his mouth, the more he talked, the more things worked out, the less support he got, which, you know, kind of entertaining on a certain level. Gotta be quite honest. It has been, I'm not going to say fun. It's been interesting watching some of the responses from Republicans. You look at Republican Mike Rogers, who left a meeting clearly not happy. As my oldest daughter used to say when she was a little kid, he don't happy. He called the eight Republicans who caused this mess traitors. Called them that four times. Used the word traitors four times. Said they've paralyzed the House by removing McCarthy. And yeah, duh. Because look, Scalise was never going to get to the 217. Not going to happen. And now Rogers is saying, you know, Democrats have to help. No. No, this is where Democrats, you know, sit back, let the Republicans do their thing, which is nothing. Now, as the day went on today, as I said, Scalise somehow lost support. I don't know how that happens. I don't. Which is why you now have moderates in Congress on the Republican side, if there are any. This is the weird thing. They keep saying there are moderate Republicans, and you know, I'm not seeing it. There's really far MAGA, you know, extreme Kook caucus, Scott Perry, you know, Matt Gaetz, that kind of clan over there. And then there's just your run-of-the-mill crazy Republicans who are not, you know, they're not the party of Reagan. They're certainly not the party of Eisenhower. You know, I don't even know that they're not the party of W. Bush. I don't quite know who they, well, they're the Trump party. This is where we are right now. But they're saying, hey, there are center-right Republicans. There's a center-right Republican governance group. And they think that they should empower the temporary speaker so that we can be functional. Because they've already given up on the fact that they themselves, that the Republican Party can do anything to govern. They're admitting this. They're going, we just have to give up. We just have to go. We're going to change the rule and make it so the temporary guy can just, you know, just hang around long enough to finish out the term. And we're going to lose power anyway. So this is what it appears to me. Now, I agree with Andy Ogles, the Republican from Tennessee. Weird, I know. Another extremist. But he said, look, Republicans got to lock themselves in a room. I agree. Got to lock yourselves in a room. In fact, should lock themselves in a room. And cage match style, you know, whoever crawls out gets to be speaker. I think that's it. Now you got Tom Cole, the Republican from Oklahoma, who my friend Bob Ney thinks could be the sane, rational one. If there is a moderate, this is supposedly the guy that could possibly be. He's warning of a potential coalition speaker. You know, someone that all of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans then choose, which Republicans would not like. And he said, look, if people aren't careful, if they aren't very careful, they're going to open the door for a coalition speaker, which is not something that we should want to happen as Republicans. No, you shouldn't. You should be somewhat functional, but you're not. Because as Representative Troy Neal says, the Republican from Texas, we're broken. He walked out of the Republican conference meeting and basically just said, we're a broken conference. And you go, yeah, you're a broken conference. Mike Kelly from here in Pennsylvania, liken the situation to a football team calling in the play in the huddle, lining up on the line of scrimmage, and then not snapping the ball because nobody's listening to the quarterback. Love that. Now, here's the thing. It's all fine, well, and good. You know, that we have no functional House of Representatives. It's all fine, well, and good that the Republicans aren't going to do their jobs and still get paid, oddly enough. But here's the thing. The president is saying that he's going to be needing to request more aid for Israel. He's going to be requesting aid for Ukraine. There's also talk of requesting aid for Taiwan, as I understand. And my first thought when I saw this story is, you know, the president's going to make a request for more aid. And I'm going, to who? You know, who's he going to request it from? There's nobody home. There's nobody in the house. There's no functional house. There's because all monetary, all purse stuff, all cash stuff, all money stuff has to emanate from the house. Sure, Joe Biden can do their work for them. He can write the bill and go, here, this is what I want. The Senate can go, hey, this is what we can agree to. Here it is. But it still has to start in the House. This is the thing. Now, I look at Republican Dusty Johnson from South Dakota. He says it's really, really hard for this Republican House to govern. We have an incredibly tight margin and, frankly, some members who have a hard time getting to yes on almost anything almost every week. Yeah, it's because you have poor leadership. You have a party that is broken beyond repair, because everyone's searching to be in the spotlight. Everyone wants to be the star. Everyone wants to be, well, on Fox News. They want to do the podcast circuits. They want the attention. There used to be a word for that, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that on terrestrial radio. It starts with a W and ends in or. But you know, this is who these people are. Their attention, you know. Now here's the weird thing. If you remember, prior to Republicans taking power, Nancy Pelosi had a smaller margin. And amazingly, we didn't shut down the government. Amazingly, we didn't, you know, oust the speaker. Amazingly, we didn't do a lot of the craziness that we're seeing out of Republican-led government. In fact, we got stuff done, some really great stuff. Some historic stuff, infrastructure bills. We've got investments in the future. We got a CHIP Act. We got stuff done. And this is the difference between people who believe in government, believe in doing their job, coming to doing an honest day's work, a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, and people who are just primping and preening for the cameras. And I think, again, Senator John Fetterman is absolutely correct. The U.S. is not sending their best and brightest to Congress. He was on with Colbert and said, sometimes you literally just can't believe these people are making the decisions that are determining the government here. It's actually scary. And I agree. Now, here's the thing. You know, Representative Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, Republican, said, it does seem as we've opened the Pandora's box of unrestrained ambition, people feel no loyalty to this institution. You go, really? I would argue your entire party. Again, and I hate saying this because I wish it weren't true, because we need a functional Republican Party, because we need functional people to do things that need to be done. But I go back to January 6th. I go back to the Trump administration. These are people who don't believe in institution. They don't believe in our government. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in this country. They believe in their narrow-minded ideology and their blind ideology of what they think this country should be, but certainly not what it is. But I got lots to get to and lots to talk about. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come the talk.
We are are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, this has caught the attention of some, you know, hey, and it's good. It's good because we do need functional government. And here to share some thoughts, you know, maybe got an idea. Let's get Steve in Chicago on line one and get some thoughts here. Steve, what's on your mind, brother?
Well, I wanted to say that I couldn't agree with you more with regard to the need for a functional Republican Party. I know that there are some people on the left, and I've spoken to a great many of them over the years, who would, you know, given the choice, they would eradicate the Republican Party tomorrow. The problem being that would leave a large hole in the body politic, because there are a large number of people in this country who actually adhere to many of the principles which the traditional Republican Party represents. And there are some that actually adhere to some of the crazy nonsense that the Republican Party has come to represent. So the idea of simply removing them entirely from the landscape, and it would be just a country run by Democrats, that's a recipe for civil war and the destruction of our democracy. So, yes, they need to exist. But having said that, it is not the responsibility of Democrats to help you create a functional party. And this idea that somehow the Democrats are going to bail out somebody so that they can be the Republican speaker, I mean, is ludicrous. I mean, McCarthy went on the air before he was ousted to basically blame Democrats for the ills of this country and what he was facing, rather than, you know, standing up there and saying, you know what, there are some sane Republicans, we want to govern, we know that there are some sane Democrats, they want to govern, let's sit down, let's talk, let's have a meeting. He might have been able to remain Speaker. Who knows? But no, you know, as you have pointed out, there was a time in this country when it was my party came before me and the country comes before everything else. Today, it's exactly the opposite. What happens to the country, not my problem. What happens to the party, again, not my problem. It's my career and my agenda, and because we've gerrymandered so many of these districts into places where only the most extreme candidates can win, you basically have any number of Republicans who know better. They are adult enough to understand better, but they don't dare stand up and say the right thing because they're afraid they're going to be primaried by some wacko who's further to the right than they are. And I don't know what the answer is other than to say, you know, somebody's got to show some intestinal fortitude and character in that party and stand up and say, you know what, it may cost me my career in this party. And it may take 10 years, long after I'm gone, for us to regain some semblance of normalcy and be a functional party. But, you know, I'm willing to pay that price because my country comes before anything else. But today, no. It's a bunch of people who are, again, I can't say anything that's going to threaten my position, because God forbid that I should lose the next election. Because, you know, as a former congressman, that means I'm going to be homeless on the streets as if there's no other option for me. I mean, come on.
No, you're right. And we got to get money out of politics. I mean, every congressman I've ever talked to, every person who's ever left office said, you know, the number one thing you got to do is you got to get money out of this game, because people are just too beholden to getting the attention, to fill the coffers so that they can run for the next election. It's not about doing the work today. So that's a huge part of it as well, Steve.
Yeah, and you know, congressmen want to be senators. Senators want to be presidents. I mean, and the fact is that over the past few decades, we have not managed to hold the line even. You know, we have eroded that demarcation between money and politics, such that, you know, the Supreme Court has basically said, well, hey, you know, it's speech. Money equates to speech. So, you know, you can buy democracy in this country.
Yeah.
You know, so if you know, a handful of billionaires want to pass the XYZ policy, and for people who don't know it, This is possibly the greatest investment that you could make if you want any sort of public policy. Senators and congressmen are remarkably cheap to buy in America.
Yes, they are.
For what you get. I mean, you know, you can, if you're in the defense industry, if you're in healthcare, you can go down a long line of public policy sectors, and you say, okay, how much does it cost to get my guys elected to Congress? You know, to get a dozen congressmen elected, to get 5-6 senators in key positions elected.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Versus the hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars that they can then ensure comes to my sector, or monies that I don't pay in to regulate my sector, or I don't pay in taxes.
No, you were spot on right, Steve. I appreciate the thoughts. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Let's go to Jack in Wisconsin on line two. Jack, how are we doing today?
Well, pretty good considering the craziness that's going on. Your previous caller, I think Steve was his name, I think he had it right. Ever since Reagan said the government's not the answer, the government's the problem, that's paraphrased. That's not a direct quote, I think. But in any case, ever since then, it has been the policy of the Republican Party to break the government, to show that the government doesn't work, and then blame the Democrats for it. That's the first thing I want to say. Second thing I want to say is, in terms of the crazy gerrymandering, we're trying to do something about that in Wisconsin, by the way. Our gerrymandered legislature, from 46% of the vote, is about 65% Republican. But that's going to go before the state Supreme Court, and I think it has a very good chance of being changed, hopefully before the next election. And finally, I have a wonderful quote here from Jamie Raskin from an NPR interview, I think in January of 2021, and he said, "I wish the Democratic Party wasn't the only democracy party in America, but it is." And that really boils down to what the situation has become.
Absolutely spot on, Jack. Right on. And look, in Wisconsin, by all means, please, take back your districts. Take back your state to somewhere near the Seine line. I've been begging for that since 2011. But I appreciate the thoughts.
We have been working on that since 2011, too.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. Call again. Let's go to Alice on line three. Alice, how are we doing? And what's on your mind?
I'm insane. What I wanted to say was, this nonsense going on in the House is just crazy. And I don't even know why Steve Scalise was trying to get in there, because, you know, I was reading, and he has multiple myeloma. And I, you know, that's a very nasty cancer. And I know that because my dad had that and passed away from it. So, by the way, wanting to show a little bit of niceness, I sent him a message on Facebook and told him that I was sorry to hear that he had multiple myeloma, and that I hope that he went into full remission.
Yeah.
But I hope that these people hurry up and get their stuff together, because the world's burning and they're twiddling their thumbs. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I wish him well. I do. Look, he's got a blood cancer, and you know, he's had it rough. I mean, he got shot not too long ago. He's got this blood cancer. Health-wise, I wish him well, a long, healthy life, all that stuff. I just don't want him as a speaker. I just don't want him anywhere near power or leadership or any of that, because the guy is terrible. I mean, and we don't need that kind of extremism. Now, the question then becomes, who is going to be speaker? Who wants to be speaker? This is one of those weird things where you go, the guy who wants to be speaker is the guy you don't want. Because that's the person who's doing it probably for all of the wrong reasons. I mean, I look at Jim Jordan, I look at Scalise, the people who threw their name in. You know, I don't think the best interest of the country was anywhere near their thought process. It was about power. It was about control. It was about, oh, I'm going to be able to wield the gavel. But here we are. And again, I go back to, we need to have a functional government. And, you know, as people have already said, look, this goes back to Reagan. This goes back to, you know, government's the problem. And we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to any time, you know, we talk about our government, it's always got to be an attack line. It's always the butt of an attack. Instead of saying, look, you know, we should be electing people who want to be functional representatives, who are going to solve problems, who have expertise, not someone who just was able to raise enough money from billionaires or was able to win a popularity contest, but people who actually know something, want to do something, have a record of doing things to help we the people. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Isn't that what it was meant to be? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1899. That was the day union miners in Mount Olive, Illinois, began commemorating Miners' Day. Every year, thousands came into town for a parade, music, and speeches. Mount Olive was the site of the only union-owned cemetery in the United States, established by UMWA Local 728 in the aftermath of the Verdun Massacre. A year before to the day, striking miners had been killed in a shootout with company goons attempting to herd scabs into the mines in Verdun, Illinois. But, as Mother Jones biographer Elliot Gorn notes, the train never unloaded its cargo and the company was forced to settle. The union hoped to erect a gravesite monument commemorating those miners who had been killed at Verdun, but they were refused by those who considered the fallen miners to be murderers and not martyrs. That's when the United Mine Workers established the Union Miners Cemetery, and on this day, 10,000 turned out for the union's memorial ceremony. The United Mine Workers unveiled a monument dedicated to the fallen Verdun miners E.W. Smith, Joe Gitterly, Ernest Kramer, and E.F. Long. The day was filled with parades, music, laying of wreaths, and speeches. Haymarket widow and radical activist Lucy Parsons was among the speakers. In his book, Death and Dying in the Working Class, Michael Rosnow notes that her presence drew a direct connection between the fallen miners and the Haymarket martyrs, cut down while advancing the cause of labor. Thousands traveled to Mount Olive every year for celebrations, including Eugene V. Debs, miners' leader John Mitchell, and Mother Jones. In 1923, Mother Jones asked to be buried with her boys, noting they are responsible for Illinois being the best organized labor state in America.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Over time, words with beautiful meanings occasionally get degraded into ugliness. Gentle, for example. Originally meaning good-natured and kindly, it was twisted into gentry in the Middle Ages by very ungentle land barons seeking a patina of refinement. Then it became a pretentious verb to gentrify, meaning to make something common appear upscale. And now the word has devolved to gentrification, describing the greed of developers and speculators who oust middle and low-income families from their communities to create trendy enclaves for the rich. The latest move by these profiteers is their meanest yet, targeting families with the most tenuous hold on affordable shelter, people living in mobile home parks. Some 20 million Americans, especially vulnerable senior citizens, veterans, the disabled, and immigrant workers, make their homes in these inexpensive parks. Well, inexpensive until the vultures sweep in, including multi-billion dollar Wall Street powerhouses like Blackstone Group, Apollo Global Management, and Carlyle Group that are buying up hundreds of trailer parks across the country. These are easy for unprincipled speculators to grab. While tenants might own their mobile homes, they rent the lots. And the first sign that a huckster has taken over a neighborhood park is an unwarranted spike in everyone's rent. Residents are captive tenants, for these homes are not really mobile, and even if one can be moved, the cost can top $10,000. New Yorker magazine notes that today's typical mobile home park has been called a waffle house where customers are chained to their booths. Corporate predators are steadily driving out lower-income families, then remaking the parks to attract upscale owners of million-dollar mobile homes. This is Jim Hightower saying, and where do former tenants go? Away, out of sight, out of mind.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of fun and craziness. And look, you know, I'm just watching this speaker thing, and I come back to who in their right mind in this moment would want to be Speaker of the House? If you're a Republican, you know, why would you put yourself into this mess? I have no idea. But here to help us work through some of the machinations of insanity, some of the cabal of crazy, and maybe where this is going to end up. Maybe Democrats take the House. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe Republicans finally wake up to the reality that they just don't want to govern. They don't want to be in charge. They don't want to lead. They like being the bomb-throwing minority party. Maybe this is where we end up. And, you know, I'm okay with that. And here to share some thoughts, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com if you want to take a look at the incredible reporting and storytelling she does there. We'll get links out on social media. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I am well. So what are you making of this? What do you make of the latest bits of insanity? Scalise is out. You're not going to have Steve to kick around. You're not going to have David Duke without the baggage to kick around.
Oh, what a bummer. So he could only get to, I think it was 119 votes, maybe. What I think is hilarious is that he went into the caucus today saying, oh, yeah, I've got 150 votes. Yeah. And which is what they're sort of benchmark was going into this, and if you could get to 150, they were like, all right, that'll be the point at which we all say, okay, we'll put our support behind him. So he goes in there, they have this vote, he says that he can get to 150, and then all of the sudden it turns out he can't. Like, maybe he was lying the whole time. Oh my gosh, I know. Everybody's shocked at a Republican who is lying.
Yeah. Shocked, I tell you.
Shocked. But in the meantime, he got Jim Jordan to drop out and endorse him, which I think is hilarious. But still, nobody's behind Scalise. And so I think there were just so many people that were hardline know that he was never going to win. And I don't know. I think you're right. Nobody in their right mind would ever want a job like that with the Republican Party the way that they are. And I think the hilarious thing is there are so many Republicans that are now, I mean, they've been attacking Democrats this whole time, being like, it's your fault.
It's what right? they do. It's, yeah, we broke the lamp, but it's your fault for putting it on the table.
Right. Like, you know, this is all your fault because you didn't do anything to stop us, or, you know, it's the
you didn't stop us. You didn't protect us from ourselves.
And I feel like at this point with the Republicans that are saying, well, you know, we need Democrats to come in and save us, it is essentially Republicans admitting, hey, guess what? We can't govern. You know, we shouldn't be in charge of Congress, essentially is what they're saying. Or we need Democrats to make us be in charge of Congress. One of the Republicans, Representative Joyce, had the guts to suggest, what's his name, the interim guy, the gavel, McHenry. Yeah, McHenry, should that Democrats should allow him to be speaker for like 30 days or something like that. And I was like, that dude threw out Nancy Pelosi from her office while she was at a funeral.
Yep.
Like, he told her she had 24 hours to get out. While she was at a funeral. Like, Democrats don't forget stuff like that. And I feel like if you maybe want something from them, you should not be burning those bridges.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those things where that was the first club out of the bag. That was the first choice. That was your first official act. Now, look, Democrats have done that kind of stuff too, but they've done other things that were at least functional. This, again, I come back to. This is a message to the American people that we can't police ourselves. We can't govern ourselves. Why would you want us to govern for anyone else? We shouldn't be in charge of the picnic basket on the way to the park, because you're going to go hungry. And this is where we are, because here's the sad reality. The globe is in crisis. The president is asking for more money, aid to give to Israel, to Ukraine, possibly to Taiwan. Who's he going to ask? Where's the money coming from? Because there's no functional house.
And we're about 30 days away from another shutdown.
Potential shutdown.
So,
right?
So I mean, I really think I go back to, remember the Problem Solvers Caucus? There's like 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats, and they never actually do anything, and they never really solve any problems. But you're kind of like, well, you got 10 Republicans. If you can get five of those to say, we're going in on Hakeem Jeffries if you give us some concessions, then I feel like that's the way that they're going to have to do it. And they can have like a power sharing government with the Problem Solvers Caucus and Democrats. And just that's how it's going to be. That's the only way I see it actually working and functioning. But I don't know if those 10 Republicans would really run the risk of losing their seats in the next election.
Yeah, and that's never going to happen. I'm going to say it's never going to happen for a couple of reasons. One, as you've pointed out, anyone who crosses the aisle and works with Democrats in this moment going to immediately be primaried and going to immediately lose their seats. And then there's the other part of nothing's going to get done anyway. So the idea that you're going to give Democrats the gavel and allow them to then shut down impeachments and shut down inquiries and shut down all of the nonsense that Jim Jordan and the Kook Squad want to bring on, it's just not going to happen. Because that's all they've got to take to the American people of, yeah, we're bad, but look how much worse they are. That's all they've got. That's it.
It is. And I think the worst part of this situation is that if that has been what, you know, is going on for the last year, and they acknowledge that they can't govern and they need Democrats to come in and do it, then essentially Democrats, you know, pass larger funding for Ukraine, for Israel. They pass the budget. They re-off the farm bill. They make sure Pentagon is fully funded, like all of these really big things, you know, Democrats are just like checking off the list, proving again, you know, they're the do nothing Congress and we actually get things done for you.
Yeah, but you would still need Republicans across the aisle to vote on that.
You'd still need those five.
Yeah, you still need them. And I don't know that you get them on board for all that stuff. I think, you know, maybe just close the door on crazy and make us at least appear to be functional. Maybe you could get them to come around, possibly. But on all the other stuff, you would really then be the end of their careers.
I know. And I started thinking, well, maybe they could make a deal with Democrats where Democrats are like, okay, we'll let you go, you know, this election. But you're right. It's the primary where they're going to get killed. So it's just like, what do you do? Because Republicans really are just so damaged as a party that they can't do anything. And, you know, on the Senate side, we've talked about McConnell before, where it's just like the old McConnell, you know, this wouldn't be happening. And that's why I really feel like something is going on with McConnell where he's really not all there, because it just seems like everything in the Republican Party has fallen apart.
Yep. Well, what's that old saying? The fish rots from the head, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's something like the fish rots from the head down or something like that. And look, you go Trump down, all dysfunction, all chaos merchants, all people who are destroyers, nobody who's interested in a functional government. No one's interested in a government that's going to help people. No one's interested in a government that actually produces results. It's honestly the only thing that they can run on is government's bad. And if they actually tried to do anything, it would hurt them with their base.
It would. And I think for those Republicans who are, you know, trying to run against the hard right, I don't know how they describe it to their people other than, hey, I'm funding your parks, I'm funding your roads, I'm bringing stuff back to the state. Because I think that's, Democrats would have to give them a whole heck of a lot of pork to come on board for something like this.
And look, I have never been against that.
Right?
You know,
I am very pro pork. Bring the bacon.
I know the T-Twitch ran on, no, we can't do this. No, that's how things get done. That's how we get bridges. That's how we get schools. That's how we get hospitals and libraries and museums and roads. And that's how the pothole out in front of my house gets fixed. Because you've got a congressman who wants my vote.
Yep, exactly. And I feel like that for a long time was sort of cut off where we weren't doing that. And now, you know, we've reinstated it, I think, because it's important that, you know, we'd be able to negotiate. And,
I'm still hoping. Are you with me here? I'm still hoping they pull Donald Trump out of the bullpen, bring him in, make him speaker.
Oh, my God. That would be so good. I know that it wouldn't be good.
It would be
the end of him in the most beautiful way. It would be it would destroy the Republican Party, especially in Congress. And honestly, like looking at Jim Jordan, I kind of don't see much of a difference there, because the biggest problem or the biggest asset I think Scalise had that Republicans were saying is that he can raise a lot of money and he can get them reasonably elected, despite the fact that he claimed to be David Duke without the baggage. Jim Jordan can't get people elected. He can't raise money. He's got nothing. Donald Trump won't raise money because he wants the money. And at the same time, the dude's too busy with his lawsuits and, you know, campaigning for president. So the fact that he's going to try and be speaker at the same time, it's just like, oh, please, let me walk you off the cliff.
No, but here's the thing. This is the question that I come back to. Do we want 4 years of this with a Trump White House? I mean, it's easy to forget what the 4 years of the Trump administration were, the chaos, the constant turmoil, the constant, and, you know, the outrage candy daily, the, you know, just the constant, you know, push and pull. I mean, it's been relatively with Biden, it's been just a guy showing up doing his job. You know,
getting
stuff done. Things are somewhat functional. You're not worried about, you know, the end of democracy just yet. I got to tell you, with 2024 coming around the corner, I think people need a shock and a wake-up call of what Trump is going to return for us, only on steroids, because he's already said retribution. That's job one.
And I think the scariest thing about another Trump administration is that before we had a lot of people who were, you know, the Mark Milleys and the Espers and people who were taking their oath of office seriously and saying, I will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Trump literally said, I never took an oath to the Constitution.
Not to support it. No, I don't support the Constitution.
I never said that I would support the Constitution.
And he didn't. In his defense, he didn't. Protect.
He just said.
And defend.
I will.
Protect and defend. Never said support. It's not in the wording, but seriously, are you going to make that word? Are you going to make that argument? That's what I would argue. That's worse than Bill Clinton, and you know, the word is.
That is way worse than the word is. You know, I don't know how he turns that into, you know, the perfect speech. Because
argument.
And I will say too, like, I don't know if you've noticed lately, but I mean, he's always sort of been crazy, but lately it seems like he's been saying some really weird kind of. I know. I mean,
lately?
So it started for me. It started last weekend whenever he said that he was endorsed by Hannibal Lecter and went off on this whole tangent about, you
that's
know,
that's a coveted endorsement.
Right. This is a long time ago. And, you know, he said that he liked Trump. And so I like him and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, do you know who that is? I mean, first of all, he's not real.
He's going to have a friend for dinner.
Right. Second of all, he's going to eat your face off. Third. I mean, I kind of went down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out who he was talking about, because I was like, OK, Anthony Hopkins kind of has washed his hands of politics, but he really doesn't like Trump. Then I thought about the dude who played Hannibal in the TV series. he really, really hates Trump. And so at that point, you're just like, well, who was he talking about? And then you're like, well, who kind of looks like him? That dude from Succession? No, he really hates Trump. And I'm like, I mean, my roommate and I were just like, I can't figure out who the heck he was talking about.
He's talking about the guy who was in the play off Broadway. One of the off Broadway productions, you know, way off Broadway, like Des Moines.
Like Des Moines. Right? I mean, I thought maybe he mixed up Hopkins with John Voight. I mean, that's the only thing I could come up with that was logical. Anyway, so that happened. Then he does this whole Hezbollah thing, which is, you know, saying that they were smart.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just been, it's been a lot of stuff. And I mean, it's more than usual is the thing. Like, it's crazier than usual. And I watch this guy all the time.
Yeah, but here, let me ask you. And there's, let me ask you this, because, you know, Trump's always taken the opposite position of the mainstream. So it's almost a reflex. Could it be that just, hey, if you're here, I got to be here. A lot of my red hat friends, if I say something, they've got to take the opposite position, no matter what it is. You know, water is wet. No. Water's not wet. You get wet from water. Yeah, okay, whatever. But could it be that, or is he just losing this? Is he just going senile?
So I do see a difference between those two things. Whenever it comes to him attacking Netanyahu and starting to, you know, accuse Netanyahu of trying to take credit for something or whatever his rant was, and being against the Israeli government, I think that is coming from Biden's 4-year relationship with Netanyahu and the fact that the two of them have very publicly talked about their relationship and Biden's support of Israel and all of those things. And so Trump is like, well, now I have to go, because Netanyahu is not my guy anymore. He doesn't like me anymore. He's supporting Joe Biden by being nice to him or something. So that is one thing. Going off about Hannibal Lecter, I just am like, that is the dividing line between me, where he goes off on these weird tangents about policy or whatever. And at least you can sort of, I know this is crazy, you can follow where his brain is bouncing around to. But that one and a couple of the other ones for the last couple of weeks, I've just been like, what?
Yeah, like if he's stuck in the ocean, he's got a choice of being eaten by sharks or electrocuted.
Yeah.
You know, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the whole like, I'm going to choose electrocution every time, after he just went off on a whole tangent about how he hates battery powered vehicles. And you're just like, but all vehicles have batteries. I mean, there was that. Some of it is he tries to make jokes and he doesn't know how. I've been writing about Omarosa lately because she's in this stupid villains reality. It's a reality show about a reality show, which is like, oh, come on. How did Andy Cohen not come up with that? But it reminded me of an interview that she did, I want to say maybe in 2020 or 2021, where she said that it was 21, because she said, if Trump is going to run again, then he needs to come clean to the public about his health. And she didn't say anything else. There was no follow-up done by the reporter, because it was like the Today Show or something.
Right.
And no one has really answered that question in the last 2 years. And I'm starting to wonder now, you know, he has been accusing Biden of being sleepy and cognitively impaired. And usually when he's pointing fingers, it's because it's him.
Right.
And so now I'm like, oh, crap, it really is him. Like, something is seriously going on here. And maybe it is.
Yeah, maybe it is. Either way, very scary guy. Now, do you agree with George Conway, who said that Democrats need to go on the attack? They need to do some psychological warfare because they need to make what he's saying is the Democrats need to make Trump crazy because there are things that that he doesn't. He knows he's not smart. He knows he's not that rich. He knows he's not that good. He says, so if you go and you attack him on the things he knows deep down that he's not, it's going to make him crazy. He's not that far from his bursting point. Do you agree with that?
I think it's it's brilliant and it's perfect. It's not something the Democratic Party does, because I don't feel like they have the ad people. Well, either the ad people smart enough to do it, or clever enough to do it, or willing to do it. But if you've got people like the Lincoln Project willing to do it, and we can get some more super PACs who are smart enough to do these things, then I think it absolutely should be done. And it's easy. I mean, Lincoln Project does it all the time, and it's so affordable because you can just do an ad buy, you know, in that small town of Bedminster on Fox, or one, you know, in Palm Beach on Fox. And it's so easy to just mess with his head. And they do it, you know, Lincoln Project does it all the time. And I think they should just turn it up a notch.
No, but again, these are former Republicans. They're Republicans. They're going to go back to whatever, you know. These aren't, they're not Democrats. They're not coming over with open arms. That's not happening.
Democrats don't play dirty. And been their downfall.
It goes back to that stupid comment, when they go low, we go high. And I remember the day that dumbest statement ever spoken was thrown out there. When they go low, we go high. And I go, no. When they go low, you smash their face into the dirt so they don't do it again. None of you people ever play football. When someone goes for your knees, you put your knees in the back of their neck and drive them right into the dirt. They don't do it again.
So for me, in the campaign world, what I've always said is, as the candidate and as the main campaign, you always operate that way. And you let the super PAC and the third party people do that level of attack because you don't want it under your name. The problem is that Democrats have been so unwilling to use soft money in that way. And I don't know if it's because they're coming at it from a moral high ground of, oh, well, we shouldn't have super PACs, or we shouldn't be fighting like that. It's stopping at imaginary stop signs, essentially.
No, as I've always said, you know, in a street fight, Democrats will often offer to hold your coat. And they won't ball up their digits and get in there and swing away. And this is why, again, I think the reason they've lost the white working class is because they aren't willing to go in and engage in some, you know, some fisticuffs and mix it up a little bit. Because, look, they've got the right policies. They've got the right arguments. They just don't go out there and throw enough punches. And look, I think Gavin Newsom, I don't know what he's doing lately. Some of the things that he's been vetoing, very curious to me. But you know, I think he's one of those guys who is willing to go out there and mix it up a little bit.
I do too. And it's been refreshing. But again, you know, California is the kind of universe where they have Democrats that are fighting amongst themselves a lot. And so, you know, Republicans are so marginalized in that state in a lot of districts that I kind of feel like it's easy for somebody like Gavin Newsom to attack Republicans. And for somebody who's like, you know, a moderate in the middle of, you know, Omaha trying to get elected as a Democrat, it's a lot harder to play that game.
I still come back to you got to get out there and you got to throw the punches.
Yeah. Somebody should give us lots of money so that we can do ads attacking us, attacking Trump and playing the psychology game on him and just completely messing with his head.
There you go. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on, you got Josh Hawley who said, hey, now's a good time to gut the funding to Ukraine so we can give to Israel. Marjorie Three Names. I guess she's involved in this too.
Yeah, it's so interesting. All of these people, I think it was Marjorie had a photo that she took with Code Pink or something last week and has become this like, oh, I'm anti-war. I don't believe in war. Everybody's like, oh, we need to pull out of Ukraine because we shouldn't be for war. And now everybody's like, we're going to war with Israel for Israel. We're going to war. We're going to war. So that's been interesting to watch. All of these people who suddenly are in favor of war. And now they're trying to make the excuse, well, we can't be having two wars at the same time. And I'm like, really? Didn't we just finish spending 10 years buying two wars at the same time, one of which was a complete fraud? Because, I mean, we seem to do that okay, and you guys were fine with it. And at least we're not putting troops on the ground this time. Yep. Yet, I suppose.
Let the fun begin. Oh, I forgot. I forgot to ask about Trump in the Forbes 400.
Bless his heart. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Well, there are some who argue he should have never been on it in the first place, but you know.
Yeah.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W22 80 P. Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.